don't need the most moral person there. Yeah, I just want a person who will listen to the people, who will do the job. I don't care why you listen to the people, whether it's out of the goodness of your heart or whether it's out of expediency, as long as the outcome is you listen to the people.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So welcome to another episode of the Alternative Budget Debate 2023, right? So I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut. And today I'm joined with two very amazing people because it is inevitable that we have to talk to them to talk about today's topic, right? So maybe we can start. Walid, introduce yourself.
Hello, hi, I am Walid and I am an assistant professor at NTU's Public Policy and Global Affairs
program. Don't start like that. You start like that, it cancel. You know, like,
okay. It's like, so I am a YouTuber.
Is that better? And a TikToker.
Okay. TikToker, I still feel a bit embarrassed to say that. So I have Teh Tarik with Walid.
Please. Yeah, Singapore's number one political podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to have been anointed as the top political podcaster by Reggie.
I'm happy to have anointed you. Yes. Bless you. And we have Mark.
It's an honor to have been a presence of, you know, both of you.
Hey, come on, you are the guy behind the the biggest publication, the alternative publication down there, like Paisei, what?
Okay, anyway, I'm Mark and I'm the founder and CEO of Rise Media. We are an digital media platform based out of Singapore. Okay, we cover perspectives, news, insights on contemporary culture across Singapore and some parts of Southeast Asia.
Mm. Does your publication have a political platform? Or like a political slant?
I want to be very, very careful about this.
Of course you should.
I mean, everyone has their own politics, right? But like as a publication, we don't have, you know, we don't have an ideology. We don't have like I wouldn't say that we lean a certain way. I think that kind of echoes most of like the people that you would meet here in Singapore, at least, you know, they would. Something we can get into later about how I think that, you know, quite a lot of us are economically left, but culturally right.
No, but why I ask that question? Yeah. Because I'm quite sure everybody associate Rise Media as on the left.
I think that if you kind of lose, you know, like that if you want to import what we see in the US in terms of like how we define left and right.
It started in France, by the way. Anyway, please.
Sure. I guess if you want to point.
Don't. Right. You can laugh, you know, it's okay. We are a relaxed show, you know. We are not Teh Tarik with Walid, very serious one, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But I guess like, you know, I guess the impression from that usually comes from the fact that we, as a publication or a platform, we try to shed light on areas of society that might not receive enough coverage, but that might also, you know, influence very mainstream relevant issues.
Yeah.
So by definition, you know, like it would mean that, you know, our coverage sometimes, or I would say sometimes, but more often than not, it extends towards what might be stereotypically associated as kind of like liberal kind of like, you know, issues. But that is not the intent behind our work.
Okay.
Right. So like what we want to do is to try and bring as many perspectives to the table as possible. And then in doing that, you know, like hopefully you feel a bit more enlightened after you read our content.
And I think you guys are doing a decent job, right? I
mean, that's really the idea.
It's good stuff. Okay, so today I got you guys in to talk about the most important, you know, of all topics, you know, in our four-part series called the Alternative Budget Discussion, right? The debate, okay? And this is the most important in my view. And the question is, has PAP shifted economically left secretly? Okay, so this is an important discussion, you know, but before we begin, okay, I want to just give yourself a little bit of time to establish how Singaporean are you so that you have legitimacy to comment on this.
I always find this kind of questions, I always find them a bit odd, you know, because being Singaporean is, for most people, is an accident of birth. Isn't it? Yeah, it's an accident of birth,
it is.
Right? So in a sense, right, the true Singaporeans are the ones who chose to be Singaporeans.
The converts, huh?
The ones who came over and then willingly gave up their passport, they are the true Singaporeans in a sense. So for everybody else, it's an accident of birth, right? But anyway, so, I mean, that aside, right, I think there are a few things that would make, if you ask Singaporeans, what are the top five traits that make you a Singaporean, maybe multiracialism or a version of it, meritocracy, food, Singlish probably. And I think it's extremely crucial. You know, us people who grew up in a different time as opposed to other people, you know, football was very important for us, but now it's no longer as important for kids, which is a shame. So yeah,
That is a position.
It's a shame. It's a shame because football, void deck football was very good for multiracialism. Right.
Okay, that's a lecture. We can hold that thought. Okay.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question, to be honest. How Singaporean are you?
Okay, yeah. Fair.
To be very honest, right, I haven't actually spent a lot of time kind of like, it's probably the first time I'm actually being asked to kind of like, you know, even reflect on something like this, because this is not something that I have spent a lot of time thinking about. But what I can say is this, I mean, like, you know, I still feel, I guess, you know, like emotional sometimes, like, you know, like when I kind of watch National Day Parade, even though I'll never admit it to anybody, which
you
I
just
am admitting now
to everyone.
I guess that, you know, if I think about it, maybe that counts. If you were to ask me whether, like, you know, like I feel strongly about my national identity, I would say that I'm just a few degrees more than ambivalent. I don't know whether that means anything.
Okay. I mean, right? I get it.
So, like, I think that, like, Walid raised a very good point. I mean, you know, it's an accident on birth. I didn't choose to kind of be born Singaporean. I am Singaporean. Went, you know, like, I did the whole thing, you know, like, army, NS, etc. You know, like, PSLE, O-levels, whatever, right?
I love how those things are, like, Singaporean. Tick, 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 Singaporean.
You know, but I think that if you were to ask me whether I would want to be anywhere else, I think that, you know, like, on balance, it feels really good to be here, lah, you know, even though I might bitch and moan about it quite often. right? But yeah, like, you know, like I guess in that sense, I am still choosing to be here. It's not like I have that kind of like financial freedom where I can just F off and kind of like, you know, like, you know, establish anywhere I want. But I mean, truth be told, if you really, really wanted to kind of leave, you know, like, you will find a way to do it. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you just need to kind of maybe live within your means and then find a route, you know. So that still requires to, I feel like the pros and cons of me doing that versus staying here, it still makes sense to be here.
But what about the increase in cigarette tax now?
I suspect, I can't say this with certainty, but like from what I've read like in recent times, I have my doubts as to whether that would actually impact smoking prevalence rates here.
Yeah.
Okay, number one. Number two, I think what probably needs to kind of like come up with this is that, okay, like the additional tax revenue, how is the government going to spend it? Is it going to be channeled towards like, no, I mean, is it going to be channeled towards, you know, like initiatives to help people quit? And then you're going to see more, you know, campaigns on like, say like MOH or HBB, for example, that they've been running in the past, right? And then I guess the third thing here, right? Like, you know, we already see people vaping all over the place, unregulated. Wouldn't this just drive the black market? So these are just some questions that I have. I mean, obviously, I'm not a, you know, a professor in that sense, but yeah, I feel like, you know, like it feels logical, right? If cigarettes are now like what, $15-16 a pack?
Oh, it's already $15-16.
I think so. Like, I think after the increase, it's going to be about that price. Then, if let's say you're a smoker, you have access to kind of like black market alternatives. You know, like, seems pretty logical to me.
Well, we're very edgy, eh?
That's what I
very on the
I mean,
edge.
I just you gave me a layup, so I just went straight
for it.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay.
But I mean, yes. I think that, you know, like that aside, like, it's just, you know, a theme of like the budget, I feel like Lawrence Wong just, you know, he came out to say that there's a limit to how much fiscal policy can actually help in terms of, you know, like combating things like, you know, like inflation, right? At the end of the day, we have to own self, manage own self, which means controlling our spending, right? So discretionary spending, things like, you know, like cigarettes, for example. Yeah, I think that will just have to take a hit. Like, you have to kind of manage it on that front, I guess. Maybe that's kind of the subtext. I don't know.
No, but I don't think it's own self, manage own self, right? I feel like PAP has secretly moved left. That's why we are having today's discussion. And by moving left, there are definition as to what does economically left means. And I will cede the ground to our professor in studio.
Yeah, so I don't...
You really take it like you professor. I mean, I know you are, but we're trying to be like more conversational. Don't like...
It's an important question, right?
Yes.
So I would say the PAP moved left long ago.
Yes.
It's, I think if the question is being asked now, I think it's a bit too late. I would say it's 12 years too late. And you can really see the ground being set after 2011. What was the catalyst? The 2011 election, right? Elections have consequences. And I always say this, right? If there's no demand, right? I mean, I'm trying to speak your language.
Yes, yes.
If there's no demand, there's no supply. And if there's no demand from the voters, there won't be a supply from the politicians. Mm. When you see your politicians, you have to tell them what you want. You don't just say niceties. Otherwise, you cannot blame them when they don't. And the biggest show of demand is during elections. That's not the only show. Can show through Facebook posts or whatever it is. Oh, sorry, TikTok videos, Instagram posts for a younger audience, right? So you can show that through other things, but ultimately elections is still the most important. So I would say the PAP moved left long ago, but it accelerated, in my opinion, after the publication of This Is What Inequality Looks Like.
Yes.
By Teo Yo Yan. Mm. So 2018, and then you can see over the past 4 or 5 years, and initially there was a negative reaction from the government to that book, and even an op-ed was written against it in the Straits Times. But subsequently, you see, they are all talking about inequality. They are all talking about inequality. And the PAP realizes, see, the thing is, right, I mean, you're a boss, right? So if you give your, let's say one day you start implementing, right? You say, okay, we'll have a 4-day work week. And then later on, right, 5 years down the road, you want to change it to a 5-day work week, right? Then there'll be riots, right? I mean, probably I'm exaggerating, but there'll be a lot of unhappiness.
Of course.
It's much easier to not give them that from the start than to take it away once it's given, right? Yep. So once all of this, once the momentum has already started, right, shifting left, right, it's difficult to move away from it. Now, but when we talk about left, right, first thing, just that the American or the Western left, right may not neatly fit here. That's the first thing. And the second thing is economically, and I like how you phrased it as well. You were very careful. You didn't say as the PAP move left, because you can move economically left without being politically left. Yeah. Mm. So
I love it. I love it. So, what is the common understanding of economically left today?
Right. Okay. So if the left and right, maybe in terms of economics, so the left would be more welfarist policies, more redistribution, more government intervention. Think about the Keynesian economics, for instance. And the right would be more free market, right?
Mm.
Now, the left and right, in terms of economics, right, they do not disagree that in the long run, the free market will sort everything out. But the people, the economists on the left would say that in the long run, we're all dead, right? Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead, right? So what is the long run time period? So don't wait for the free market. Let's intervene now. Let's try to equalize not outcomes, but opportunities as much as possible, right? And I think that's the difference between the left and the right. So the right, more, less government intervention, less welfare, more free market, trickle-down economics, right?
Yes.
So whereas for the left, it's more active redistribution.
That's essentially the stage, right? Setting it up. Do you think the government has shifted left, economically left?
I mean, I think it's patently obvious, based on, what we've seen from the different budget announcements over the past, couple of years. I think that they don't really have a choice here because, I think the broader, from my perspective, aside from the politics of this, right? So if you look at what Singapore needs or, what's actually happening right now, crazy inflow of Chinese money coming into the market. Just look at the property prices. Look at the rental rates. Cite numerous examples, my friends who were renting properties pre-COVID and then rental rates just ran up by 100, 120%, 200%. And there are takers in this market, right? Yeah. So the fundamental issue here, right, is that social compact, right, with the people, right, is at risk here because on one hand, you need that kind of foreign investment and money coming in because it does create jobs, But on the other hand, right, there are things like basic things that are really important to the people here, like the affordability of homes.
Right.
Right? Like that they have to maintain and they have to kind of make sure that they hold up their end of the bargain in that regard. Yeah. So that's why I think that they don't have a choice because on one hand, we need that foreign investment and there's a lot of money coming in on that front. So the institutions, the financial institutions are all kind of profiting from this, the private banks, for example. Right. But at the same time, regular Singaporeans like myself looking to kind of buy a home, that's tough, right? So politically, they need to kind of do something on that front. This is how I see it.
I completely agree. And I think the HDB, if there is one issue that would undo the PAP's hegemony, it is the HDB. And that is, well, you can say probably it's a ticking time bomb. And that has to be settled somehow, right? And there are no easy solutions to this, by the way.
Yes.
No, there are no easy solutions if tomorrow you suddenly say, oh, let's go back to, it's not the free market, right? So let's go back to $60,000, $100,000, right?
I mean, cost plus premium.
I'm sure the people here, people who own this beautiful house, right, would be rioting on the streets together with me. The people have already paid for it.
So, but basically,
there's no base that you will not alienate through. Tough choices need to be made because I think the once it was decided that it was going to be packed to the market rate, it was irreversible. So don't forget the twin pillars of PAP hegemony, right? Economic welfare, material welfare, and societal stability. And Mark mentioned the social contract. So the PAP's hegemony is not based on freedom of individual. They've never claimed that, right? It's societal stability and material prosperity. So even if you tell me, oh, GDP growth is 10%, 5%, right? Or 3%, right? Who cares? I want to know how much my salary increase, right? That's the most important. I want to know my real salary, not even the gross salary, right? My real salary. So I think that is what the PAP also senses this, right? The PAP senses that there are a lot of unhappiness. There's a lot of unhappiness on housing, on immigration, and so on. So therefore, they are also reacting to this. And as any good government should, they should be reacting to trends by that people are voicing out.
Mm. So when I was preparing for today's episode, right, I had a long call with Zad, our head of content. And he was like, so you don't think there's a moral awakening? It is about like listening to the people and giving the people what they want. And finally, PAP wake up to say that, okay, we'll give the people what they want.
Right. So I think for the longest time, the PAP has been insulated from, not completely, no party is ever completely insulated from public pressure. Right? Even the most authoritarian of dictators are not fully insulated because there's still a chance of a revolution. So the PAP has never been fully insulated, but they have been relatively insulated from public pressure, right? So as the elections get more competitive, then you will see a natural shift towards listening to the people more. It's difficult to say that. How old are you now, Reggie?
30.
Oh, yeah. Still very young. Okay. How old are you?
39,
right? So from 35 to 37 or 35 to 39, was there any stage where you suddenly woke up, oh, my moral values, moral compass are different?
I mean, honestly, it's something I don't even consider. to be frank with you, like, I mean, because like, I feel like it's if you have to kind of like sit down and like, you know, like really consider your moral compass, right? You know, then there's something wonky to begin with at the start.
Right.
You know, it's not something that you should actually be asking frequently.
So it's a like, triggered kind of situation.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that, you know, I can see like, you know, it's not mutually exclusive, right? So like, you know, like they could be listening to like what the ground sentiment. And I think they're taking that into account. But also, I think that, you know, it's just a very realistic outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the point I was asking the age, right? It's not as if after 35, right? We were also discussing this. Suddenly your values, you find a huge change in your values. Maybe one or two will change, right? But maybe when you're younger, 20s, you will experience more of these shifts as you should, right? Once you reach a certain age, you're more or less set in the ways, right? So it's difficult for me to say that suddenly, oh, there's this quote-unquote moral awakening. But maybe that's also how Singaporeans view politics. We like to view politics through this sense that politicians should be moral and all. No, good politicians should be reacting to demand. And as long as there's demand, they should be reacting to that. I think more fundamentally what is needed is how we view politics and how we have tended to put politicians on a moral pedestal. Right? Mm-hmm. I am not voting for the Pope. I'm voting for a politician.
You can't. You're not a cardinal. You're not there yet.
Right, but I'm saying I don't need the most moral person there. Yeah, I just want a person who will listen to the people, who will do the job. I don't care why you listen to the people, whether it's out of the goodness of your heart or whether it's out of expediency, as long as the outcome is you listen to the people.
Mm. And that line of questioning actually fundamentally assumes that the PAP believes they're immoral. To begin with,
correct,
you know, but I don't think so.
I don't think so as well.
But on the discussion of you saying that since 2011, which is the situation where they lost Aljunied, right?
Yeah.
They have already started.
Aljunied, by the way. Yeah. Aljunied GRC. Aljunied GRC, right?
Yeah. So your house got leaf upgrade, no?
No. Okay. Honestly, I have complaints, really. Like the management, the town council in my area, right? Playground, for example, I'm a dad now, right? Playground kind of like, you know, like swings and slides, right? You know, can stay unrepaired for like, you know, like weeks and months on end. It's a huge rat problem. Taking the opportunity right now to have a talk about it, right? I'm talking about giant mutant rats in my neighborhood.
Okay?
The other time Sylvia Lim came across, they did her like kind of a round, so I came to my house and wanted to talk about, I don't know why. I was like, you know, dude, there's a rat problem, just fix that shit first. Mm. Right. So like that's kind of like, yeah, complaints and grievances.
No, you should. Yeah, Sylvia, yeah. You must come. Yeah. Come and react. Okay.
Yeah. But it has gotten better of late, the rat problem.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the rat problem. But it's still quite bad.
Fair. Hopefully you get your leaf upgrade lah. Huh? So do you feel like, help me lay out the ideas. Like you said that since 2011, they have shifted economically left, right? And I do think it's a secret shift in the sense of they are not propagating it. Okay. Correct. And we can talk about that nuance later. But tell me, can you help us lay out, you know?
Yeah. So I think CNBC wrote an article in 2015, probably. The PAP is shifting left and without admitting or something like that, right? Because it's not... Okay, so first of all, right, the government is very averse to saying, oh, we are doing this because the people have said this, right? And you can understand why they don't want to do that, right? Because for the longest time, first of all, the longest time, the PAP has said that, oh, a good government leads and doesn't follow, right? To some extent, that's true as well, right? So, and then the other reason is because if you say you gave in to public demands, then every single thing, there'll be public demands, right? Mm. Even the Grab and Tin Pei Ling, I'm just using the opportunity to bring this.
I know, I can tell everyone is using the opportunity, so please go for it. Yes.
So even that, if you look at the statement, right, it is clearly the shift is about public pressure, but no one wants to admit that it's about public pressure. But I think Rice did write an article why public pressure works or something like that, right? So
I agree that they shouldn't. There's no good reason for them to kind of say like, you know, we have. I feel that there are a lot more cons to this,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So sure. that's why they will never admit it.
Yeah. And it legitimizes your opponent.
Yes, yeah. So it doesn't mean that doesn't happen, right? So you're asking me to lay out why it happened.
Lay out what has happened. So
2011, right? If you look at what happened. What were the issues, the main issues? Housing, immigration, and transport, right? So transport, it was, you can sort of solve it with demand and supply. And immigration is quite sticky. There are a lot of elements to it, especially with declining fertility rates, right? That was sort of resolved, but then it reappeared again a few years later, even though now it's much tighter, right? But with PSP picking up the mantle, you can see that. And PSP is not just plucking it out of thin air. It is what a lot of people are saying. The other one is housing. As I said, that is the hardest thing to do. But you can see that a lot of... So SM Tharman was also a finance minister back then, right? And he was... The language, first of all, he was using meritocracy with compassion, all that, right? And you already sense an admission without admitting that meritocracy is flawed, right? Mm. So we have to adjust it without changing its core premises. So in the language, but also in the policies, you see more of this redistribution policy. Just a couple of years ago, NUS said that there will be a per capita, they will try to increase the admissions based on per capita income for the lower income, for instance. Mm, mm. What is that? That's affirmative action.
Yes. Yeah, man. That's like...
That's affirmative action. Which is, I'm not against. I am for it. Yeah, I think that's good. Class-based affirmative action is okay, right? It's good. But all of those, right, are signals that the entire country, the entire discourse is moving left. And you see this last year also, income tax was increased as well.
Supercar tax.
Yes, and exactly. Supercar tax, you know, cigarette tax is different. That's more about punishment.
That one contentious.
But you can see that over the years, slowly, movements have been made to the left. Now, does that mean there's a fundamental shift in political philosophy? No, the PAP doesn't do fundamental shifts, right? They do incremental shifts. So you see that in whether it's housing policies, more and more grants. You see, will you be talking about paternity leave? Or
yes, please,
I just,
go for
okay,
it. Yeah.
So that one, I'm really in favor of course, for no personal biases. No, but I think paternity leave is not just good for the household, spousal relations, and it's not just good to encourage fathers to be more involved. I think if you equalize paternity and maternity leave, you remove the possible potential of discrimination against women when they are hired. during the hiring process, because this is a very difficult thing to detect. You can never detect it, right? Nobody will say, oh, I'm not employing you because you can potentially get pregnant.
You will not say that. Yes,
nobody
yes.
will say that. They'll come up with all sorts of other creative questions, right? What are your plans?
Oniata came out and say that, yeah, like she had performance review and the performance...
The boss said that.
Yeah, because you went on maternity.
Who's this?
Oniata.
Oniata Effendi.
Yeah, Effendi. Oh, by the way, this is sponsored by Baju, by Oniata Effendi. Thank you. Yes, yes.
Right. So, that's wild.
Yeah. Please check out the episode. Yes, yes.
So most people would just say, oh, what are your future plans? And then they may not hire somebody based on that. So I think if you equalize paternity leave...
Oh, I never saw it from...
Yeah, so I think from the discrimination angle, that makes... But let's ask the boss.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, obviously, like, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
You don't need to agree with us, you know. You don't feel pressure, you know. Although, like, got five people outside, you know. But it's fine.
Like, I'm a new dad myself. It makes a lot of sense. Okay. And like, but I think what related to that, what was really interesting is about a segment of the budget was really dedicated to, you know, I guess pushing people to have kids, to have families. Mm. Would you kind of like, I mean, just for the sake of this question, kind of like, is that like a left or right kind of thing? I think, or is that not?
No, I think that's existential, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think that's a political.
So I mean, hot take, okay. Right. I think low birth rates are actually an equal or more important issue than climate change.
Oh yeah.
In my opinion, and I think that when we think about it, like, you know, like it all kind of leads that way. For like, you know, like you, at some point, if you're not having enough kids, then who's going to be kind of consuming?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be driving the economy, right? Who's going to be innovating? You know, so that it goes back to the existential thing. Yeah,
if you think about Singapore itself, I would go one step further. I mean, low birth rates more existential than climate change in the immediate term. I think
it's just a very unpopular thing to kind of talk about.
Of course.
Just,
and,
you know,
and of course, it's. I mean, you cannot force people to have children ultimately, right? Yeah. So, and
you
I'm
can force
unsure
people
about
not to have children. Hey, we don't go there. Don't go back to the 1980s.
Vasectomies.
They have moved on. So that is something that is good. Okay.
By the way, the graduate mother scheme, right, was one of those where even dude at the height of Lee Kuan Yew's prowess, right. Even he had to retract.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Even back then, public pressure worked, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, so this birth rates thing, because there are social implications. You need the workforce. What are you gonna do? The only other way is immigration.
Yep.
And that will come with other issues.
Which has also proved very unpopular.
Very unpopular. You know, and it's going to come with other issues because there's going to be a lot of resentment. There's going to be xenophobia and racism and all of that. So it is, I absolutely agree with you. It's existential.
I do agree. Yeah. But I feel like it's not enough to... Like, whatever it's being done.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think people will look at the baby bonus.
Let's have baby tonight. No.
Okay, look. Rice Media just ran an article about how, like, you know, like single people are left out of the budget.
I saw that.
Great point.
That's been years.
Yeah, but like...
decade in the making.
On the other hand, I also see why, like, okay, you know, like it just makes more sense to kind of encourage people to have more kids because overall, more benefit to the economy and things are, you know, like... Unfortunately, that's the harsh reality of things.
As with all systems, if you want to incentivize certain behaviors, you do certain things, right? To build a system to incentivize it, right? But it does not mean that single people cannot be unhappy, right? So you can be unhappy, okay? You should be, right? Yes, exactly. Just like smokers.
Should we like light up now? No, I'm kidding.
We're going down. Just go wild with it.
Make a statement. No, I'm just kidding. Let's not do this.
But Wale, are you concerned? Because I think there's a part of the internet now that is saying like, why is the government dipping in my pockets? You know, so that side of the narrative existed but not so loud. Now it feels like it's growing. It's very interesting.
You spend too much time on the internet.
Don't read
social media comments. Okay. They'll mess up with your mind. Mess your mind up. So anyway,
you should comment so that we can mess the algorithm up. Okay,
please comment on ours.
Yeah, I would like, share, subscribe, everything for you.
Right. So, yes. But this is also a reality, right? That people who are on the economic left, and I consider myself to be on the left.
Me too, yes.
Yeah. So I think the reality is people on the left who are calling for all of these measures, you also have to admit that it has to come from somewhere.
Yes.
Something has got to give. You cannot continue increasing this without giving. So it has to come from somewhere. So for those who are calling for it, right, people who are more privileged, right, you have to be prepared to be paying higher taxes. You cannot say that, but then you try to come up with all sorts of ways to not pay taxes or whatever it is, right? So yes, there will be that, but also it's about what society we want to build, who we want to be as a society, I think. So we have to acknowledge that. And also, I would say that sacred cows, we can even think about the allocation of money to different ministries, right? And we can think a bit more creatively in terms of, does this ministry need that amount of money? If we reduce it by 1%, what happens? All these are very difficult conversations to have. You know where I'm going with this, right? Yeah, because education, the moment you do defense, that, right? the moment you go with that, right? Let's say you go with defense. The moment somebody suggests, oh, how could you? You don't understand Singapore's precarity. You are unpatriotic and so on.
Yeah.
But it has to come from somewhere. If it doesn't come from that, I'm not saying it must come from that. I'm saying it's an option. But if it doesn't come from that, people have to be taxed. It's either the GST or the income tax, the corporate tax.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For a lot of reasons for people to stay in America. What's the reason for people to stay in Singapore?
So I actually have a question on this, right? Like, I know we're talking about how people kind of like, you know, you guys probably lean a bit economically left, right? Do you think there's a difference between that and how people, you know, govern themselves kind of socially and culturally?
Of course.
Yeah, right?
Of course.
So 100%.
Like, doesn't that also kind of like bring up some, I don't know what kind of problems that might, or whether, I wouldn't say problems, but like, you know, like whether that there are any inconsistencies there or like...
No, I don't think there are inconsistencies. Yeah, I don't think so. Because one is talking about the way of life.
Right.
So, maybe if we use like social or cultural, you know, like I know those words are very loaded depending on which group of people you're talking to, but we just take it as the way of life. Okay, let's say the people here, the way of life is more conservative, you know, like traditional family value, blah, 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 blah. That is a way of life. Mm. But how you fund this way of life is a total different discussion. And okay,
I'm just kind of curious.
In America, you know, there was this myth, right? Bernie Sanders was too left to win, right? When actually, on every economic issue, every single one, his position was wildly popular. The median American is economically left. But the median American is socioculturally center or center right. Right,
they are center because they are the beacon of culture. Right,
right.
they set the center.
No, but yeah, correct. You're right.
That is fair, right?
No, we take the left-right spectrum from in the past.
Yes.
So that is very possible. It's very possible to be economically left, but so socioculturally, a bit more right or center. Right. In fact, I would say if I could say something about rice, maybe what I would say is rice is very socioculturally left, but politically not so much. So I won't say politically right, but I would say politically cautious, like most media outlets are. So so even on
is
the
it,
political...
Is it an existential crisis?
No.
Reason, right, not
I think,
crisis.
I think all of us are cautious to different degrees, right?
I know, you cannot sense it, man. You can sense it, right?
No, I would say rise, as in from a reader's perspective. I mean, socioculturally, you can see that they lean left.
Yes.
And maybe more so than other outlets, they are more happy to do so. Not so politically, right? And I think it's very possible to have these three dimensions, culturally, economically, and politically.
I think
it's and it's not not a moral judgment, right? It is just a recognition that this is what it is,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So then now that we've established, right, that we're in unison, right? That the PAP has moved left, right?
Yeah.
And in terms of economics. Economically, it has moved left, you know, a bit secretly. You know, some people are saying that, you know, they are moving economically left so that they can move politically right. Do you have any thoughts on it?
I don't know whether they are moving economically left because they want to move politically right.
Mm.
But I can see why that would be, that would give them ammunition to move, right? I can see why. But I would say that, so I would say the space has shrunk. The space for contestation actually has shrunk politically. While the PAP has moved economically left, in some ways the PAP has even moved socioculturally left at a slower pace than the economics, right? I mean, repeal so like 377A, but not just repeal itself. The general attitude towards LGBT communities, for instance, right? The government is very much more welcoming of that than previously, right? So you can do this while maintaining a tight grip on the political scene. And I think that is what they have done. And I think that appeases enough people, enough socio-cultural liberals to say, it's okay.
I'm just kind of curious, just for the sake of illustration, right? Like, how would you kind of like, I guess, define a move politically right in this context?
Yes, great question.
I mean, I'm not sure because, I mean, I don't see how extreme it can go in here, honestly speaking. I mean, politically, la.
Right.
That's why we got professor in the house.
I mean, I'm curious about this.
So what I would say is, the term I would say is backsliding, right? So democratic backsliding. So on one level, you have all of these indices. You know, you have the democracy index of the economies. You have Freedom House, you have VDEM, where they measure each country's level of freedoms based on certain criteria, right? So that's one. On the other, you can look at it qualitatively, right? Since 2015, for instance, I think 2011 to 2015, there was an expansion of the space. But since 2015, I think there has been a shrinking of the space, right? And you can see this, I think the government reacts more harshly maybe to certain critics or certain types of criticisms. You can see this in how the elections panned out and the election strategy, which backfired, of course, what I call Raisa Part 1. Raisa Part 1. So that was during the elections.
Right, let's go there.
No, and at that point in time, it was Raisa only. And at that point in time, it was like a Raisa strategy.
Now it's Raisa.
Now it's like Part 1, then so, this Part 2.
Do you think like the whole COVID-19 thing, right? So like, you know, that 2 year, 2.5 year period, right? Had anything to do with like, you know, that shrinkage?
No, and I think the shrinking started before. I'm not saying that it has nothing to do with it, but I think since 2015, look at the laws that have been passed. Now, the shrinking, right, I would say you can measure it objectively. It doesn't matter whether it's justified. You can take the position that these things are justified. I'm not making a normative judgment. I'm just saying that it's shrinking of the political space.
I love how we have to clarify that every
corner.
No,
so I am happy to take a normative judgment as well. But I think objectively, I think we have to say that
there's...
So POFMA... You cannot say that POFMA doesn't shrink the political space, right? In terms of limiting, or at least making people self-censor or doubt themselves before they speak. And then you have FICA, of course, which I think FICA is justified, by the way. I'm not a fan of POFMA, but FICA is okay to me. And you have activists being singled out, for instance. So you can see that this has happened over the past few years. Mm. But I'm not sure whether they do that in order to do this. Okay. I think both things are happening in tandem. Yeah. Mm. And I think why that has happened, maybe it has got something to do with transition, the most tenuous transition of the four so far, the transition within the PAP.
Can so you elaborate more can a
explain,
bit on that?
Maybe that can explain the shrinking of the space, and maybe because during this transition period, so we do not know how exactly the predisposition of the PAP will be for the next generation, right? Whether they'll open up moral awakening, quote unquote, right? Or will they think that let's shore up our support first, right? Let's do what we are used to doing. Now, what they did to Raisa, right? Is not uncommon for PAP in elections. They do that pretty often. It's just that usually it works or it didn't affect them. This was the first time it affected them negatively, right? Which they also sort of have admitted tacitly.
Wait, like the Raisa thing affected the PAP?
Raisa Part 1. Raisa Part 1.
Okay.
Raisa Part 2, it remains to be seen.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not a trilogy, right? There's some like trilogy coming later.
But who knows?
Who knows?
But anyway, Okay, fair enough.
So I think they are a bit nervous about, or they were nervous about the transition. Yeah, so that's why maybe they were a bit, you know, when you are feeling nervous, you are more edgy and you react more. So hopefully now Lawrence Wong is more secure in his skin, and he will be more open and amenable to criticisms and critics or challenges from others. Yeah, but it's a developing story because this has just happened. Lawrence Wong just first budget as prime minister in waiting, right? So we'll see how this goes. I also want to give him a chance, you know. We cannot prejudge a person, although I'm not too big of a fan of his TikTok videos. But okay, he's trying.
No, that is you. Trying, it's you and
it's just me.
It's just you and TikTok.
It's just me and TikTok. I know. TikTok. Young people love him. Yeah. But
I'm not a fan of that too.
Oh, okay. Thank you. But you're not young. Also, that's...
No, I think...
That's why.
What's that guy? The guy from Muda?
Shanmugam was doing squats on TikTok.
No. I mean, if you follow...
Do you guys want to see Shanmugam doing squats? I mean, it's got nothing to do with Shanmugam, you know. It's more like, do I want to see a 70-year-old man doing squats?
Absolutely.
Not really.
No, bro.
I don't really want to see that.
That line of questioning already got something to do with Shanmugam. Right? It's like, because there are many random 70-year-old that end up.
Really? Like,
I don't want to see. I don't want to. But, you know, like.
I don't want to see guitars. I don't want to see wushu.
No, but the. Okay, and this fundamentally assumes that people are going for politics in a rational perspective.
And
but it's not exactly the case. And the interesting part is the recent Malaysian election, right? Like Syed Saddiq and Anwar's daughter, they pretty much lost. Syed Saddiq won, but you know, they're the biggest on TikTok.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, you look at what happened. So in other words, it on some level shows that you know, people don't just care about your TikTok videos. You gotta still do the work, right? 100%.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, I don't know to what level I actually want the leader of our country to be relatable.
Yeah,
I get it. Like, you know, you want to kind of seem like you also have some interest outside of work. That's fine. But like, at some point, you know, you still want to have that
distance.
Maybe it's like, you know, just the conservative, you know, Asian kind of thing in me. Like, I still want to have that kind of leader where I feel like there's a reason why he's there, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And so I feel that all of that additional material, that's somehow, it can take away from that credibility a little bit.
Yeah. I agree.
That is my personal take. Obviously, people feel different.
I agree. But I think it's also our age, probably. But probably. I agree probably. With... For me, it's... I agree for a different reason. It's not about the conservative Asian. But I feel when you humanize the politician, right? And then you are not analyzing the parts of the politician's job that you're supposed to be analyzing, right?
Mm.
And then I mean, you see, I've seen this before, okay? And by the way, it's not just PAP fanboys, fangirls, right? It's opposition also do this. I remember there was one time PM Lee posted something about a bird on his window or what, the office, if you guys remember the bird. So he just took it. It was a nice picture and this bird always drops by, whatever it is. Yeah. And then in the comments, wow, you are such a great prime minister. What has that got to do with anything, right? So for me, like when you humanize them and then you start judging them by how many TikTok videos they do, and then you are taking away from what we should be humanizing, what we should be assessing them for, right?
How do you think, you know, I mean, just also another, you know, curious kind of question, right? Like, you know, just how does this, do you think it helps, you know, Singaporeans or just a general audience at large, right? To be able to say like, you know, like, do you think it helps kind of categorize, you know, like what's happening in terms of like left or right, you think? Like in terms of helping to understand things?
Okay, my view is no.
Yeah.
That's why in the beginning, I already set the definition of like what does economically left means, right? So, and it's defined as taxing the wealthy and then expanding the social spending base, right? So to me, these kind of definition are very important because it sets the context for the discussion rather than get embroiled in all this emotional and then like, you know, marketed, you know, energy.
But you see, right? Even though I agree with you, but human beings are not just rational creatures.
We
are emotional and spiritual creatures.
Yeah, yeah.
So we may not like it, but I'm sure it appeals. Let me just tell you a personal story, right? So my dad passed away maybe 2 years ago, and there were a few politicians that came. I didn't invite them. I just posted on my Facebook. A few of them came. Zainal Sapari, Nicole Sia, Leon Pereira. They came to the funeral, right? I will never vote against them. I will never, they can do whatever, right? I can never vote, whether you are from the PAP or WP. The ones who came to my dad's funeral, I will never vote against you, right? I have that. For me, like you were there on when I was most emotionally vulnerable. I will always remember that. I'll always remember that regardless. Now, that's a completely irrational thing to do. That has nothing to do with And I'm saying this as someone whom I hope understand politics quite a bit, right? But even then, I am aware of my emotional bias.
And that is in itself being aware. That's why you Nicosia stand. right. And she should just like run in Tampines. Right. Then got chance. Right.
But Zainal Sapari is from the PAP. So it's the same. So for me, it wasn't about the party per se, but it's very difficult for me to ever vote against people who show you that.
No, and the PAP does a great job in this front. It's like how progressive wage model is like in every essence minimum wage, but not minimum wage, right? So that is really detaching itself from the narrative of like the outside world, right? Yeah. Because minimum wage is so contentious all over the world. Mm. And if you use the same word, you get embroiled in all of things, it's like circuit breaker versus lockdown, right? It's like you get embroiled in all the media coverage.
Why do you want to get into those unnecessary?
Yeah, it's so unnecessary because we just want the essence of it. Exactly. And so progressive wage model is great in that sense, right?
Absolutely.
We get minimum wage without the rubbish that comes along with minimum wage.
Right.
So I think we quite agree, like, in terms of whether you agree or not. That's a different. But this is an observation as a phenomenon, right? So we're just observing it. And we went on all these things, right? But at the end, I think the question is, so what is a Singapore that you want?
Right.
Okay. And that you want to live for your kids?
Okay. So for me, I mean, this is a difficult question. I would say there are two aspects, internally, externally, right? So internally, what I want to see is more justice. And this includes justice in terms of economic justice. This includes in terms of maybe racial justice. It also includes political justice, right? And what I mean by that is I want to see a day where you have elections without using the harsh stick of the laws against your opponents, for instance. Ideally, that's where I want to see Singapore, right? That's the day. I hope my children will grow up and live in such a Singapore. Then humility for me is externally, but it's also for your own soul, right? A lot of times I find Singaporeans are very elitist, condescending to whether it's low-wage workers or even our ASEAN neighbors. We always think of ASEAN as some backwater, right? And we really don't. And I feel like there's a lack of humility there. I had this module, right? It's government and politics in Southeast Asia. So 13 weeks already. Last tutorial, 13 weeks. Maybe 40 hours already with them. So I said, I hope at the end of this, right, you will, after going through the Southeast Asian countries, you will know we shouldn't look down on ASEAN countries, Southeast Asian countries, and there are things we can learn from them. One of them, such as what? After 13 weeks, right? Like, you cannot even think of thing that...
Okay. So to be clear, right, just now you were saying like China was the one that put in a lot of money into Singapore in the recent times. But actually, I would argue that China, India, Indonesia are the three biggest block of capital that's been coming into Singapore for a long time, right? At least for a fast decade or two, right? And a lot of people, I think they don't realize that our vegetable come from Malaysia, our water come from Malaysia. Yeah. You know, like rice is a relatively stable because, you know, of Thailand and Vietnam being the largest producer. And they went through, you know, Thailand was never colonized. Vietnam won against the colonial power. So they got a lot more control over rice production and power and, you know, the ability to set price out of the futures market.
Right.
So without all these guys, right, Singapore cannot exist.
No, absolutely. No. So that should be the story we should be telling. Yeah. And this humility, right, it also... If you realize that you are where you are because of your hard work, yes, but that's what, 20-30%. But it's because of factors outside you, right? Then you'll be more willing to accept higher taxes, for instance, right? you'll be willing to, I need to do my part. I've already benefited. And we need to drop this humility. So I'm talking about ASEAN now neighbors, but also to people who are less privileged than us. We need to drop the term self-made. Nobody is self-made.
Yes.
What is this self-made billionaire? Do you build the roads yourself? No. You build the school that you go to, okay, right? That term has no meaning. So those two things. It's a long-winded answer, but basically justice and humility.
I'm not sure how I'm going to follow that, you know, that really kind of encapsulated a lot of things.
No, just your
But before I can touch on what I personally want to see, right, I think one of the things that I feel like, you know, it's one of the things that we have to manage down the road is that I too want a country or a nation, right, where my kid, like, you know, like, or my family, you know, like, that is kinder, more inclusive, right? But how do we kind of balance these things, right, with the fact that I think that for us to kind of, you know, maintain or even like grow, right, like the level of like kind of like comfort and life that we have here, right? I feel that there's always going to need to be that fight and that kind of like, you know, like survival 100%. Mode, right? And 100%. The kind of traits that you need, right, to be like a survivor, right, and to fight, right, are necessary. They kind of run counter, right, to a lot of the things that
absolutely
we want on the left side. So I that's something that, you know, like that human being almost doesn't exist. I can guarantee you that, like, you know, like when I'm in, you know, when it's like war mode, right, you just kind of need to kind of kill it, right? It's very difficult to hang on to, like, you know, like the other parts of you, right, that are also there. And so I think that's that balance, you know, like I think that as a nation, how do we manage that? So then that comes to flows to my answer. Like, I think that at the end of the day, I would hope that, you know, we are open-minded, right? I think that humility is very important. But I also think that being able to balance these sides, right, of that, if you think about Singaporeans as a personality type, right, how do we kind of like balance it? You know, so hopefully we find some balance there that, like, you know, that there isn't a point where we take our place here for granted, right? And then at the same time, you know, having the humility to kind of like also understand that, you know, so there's that self-awareness there. Right. Yeah, that's where.
That's great. Can I share a personal story? Yeah, so I have a huge problem, right, with everybody gets a gold medal during sports day. Yeah. Huge problem with that. I feel that takes out the competitive edge of people. Yeah. So when I went to my son's sports day, he was in N2. I saw everybody got a medal. The person who walked, the person who ran. And then I went to the parents-teachers meeting, right? Then I told the teacher, I have a huge problem with this, that, oh, we are encouraging participation. But what you're telling people, oh, don't try hard, you'll still get the same thing as a person who tried hard, right? And then are you surprised when a person goes, when you grow up, when you bring such a person up, right? That person, the first instance of failure, oh my God, the world is against me. And then there's all sorts of what? Quiet quitting, I don't know what. Okay.
Cancel him.
Are you surprised by this, right? Then there's no, when we are the ones, no, but if the younger generation, if we think our generation feels the younger generation is strawberry, that's our fault. We have created the conditions for this strawberry nature, right? So I feel like, yes, I want the kinder, the justice, all of that. But I also want, I don't want to reward a person. I tell my son, like, when he plays football, so he plays semi-competitive league, right? I tell him, you win. Not that level yet, right? I tell him, you win, you cry. You lose, you also cry. You must have that. Defeat must hurt you. Mm. If it doesn't hurt you, right, then don't play this. Do something else. Play Xbox or whatever it is, right? Don't play And I think if we are shielding them from defeats when they are growing up, it will not develop their character. The parents' first instinct, right, is always to protect.
Oh, yeah.
But that's dangerous to shield that person. So we must guard against our natural parental instinct. Yeah. It's easier said than done. It's very hard to implement. I struggle with it on a daily basis. Yeah.
I guess one way you could kind of like, I mean, just to build from that, you look at kind of like inclusiveness, right? You know, it's also kind of recognizing that there is a place and for, you know, in our society for different types of people. And what I mean by that is that, you know, it extends beyond kind of like, obviously you have, you know, between, you know, gender, sexual orientation, for sure, right? But what I mean by that also is that I think for society to function, right, you need a good mix of people. Right. So you need people who are maybe borderline sociopathic that can kind of like take the country to the next level. And then we also need to accept that comes with certain things that are
bad. Yeah.
To be very clear.
And then you need to have, you know, like people who don't want to kind of do that, but you know, like are very happy kind of like, you know, like, you know, fulfilling the other roles. And then there needs to be a place for that. So I guess idealistic, you know, utopia, you know.
No, and to be clear, it's very practical. Yeah, it's very clear. And I would argue that the real competition across nations is the middle upper class.
Yeah.
The smart working professionals that are like pushing the frontier. Yeah. You know, these guys are the one bringing in the bread. Everyone else is doing a lot of other things that are important, right? But the real tip of the spear is this bunch of people. Mm. What I hope is that we can shift the baseline higher, where even if you're not part of this tip of the spear, just so happened because of, you know, skill set circulation outward. Because last time, forklift driver were very important, right? And now they are like not important anymore.
Now we chat GPT, we die already.
Exactly. So these things changes and there will be a bunch of people that are the tip of the spear and they will forever be the real competition.
Yeah,
but for everyone else, can we shift that baseline a little bit higher, so that we can all live in, you know, some sort of dignity and comfort at the bare minimum. And of course, comfort is a word that you can but
dignity is such an important word. I think people do not realize that poverty can take away, it doesn't necessarily, but it can take away human dignity, especially when you have to ask to ask people for money, right? It can take away your own dignity.
Because to me, I think no really, really talk about this, you know, in this way, at this point in time in the local landscape. And I think it's an important discussion, you know, to recognize. So yeah, thank you for your time. Thank you. Lovely.
Thanks for your time, guys. Pleasure.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying this budget series brought to you by Rice Media and The Financial Folk. And if you like what we do, like, share, subscribe, follow our socials. Everything is in the description below. And meanwhile, take care.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.